couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Flood, The Wretched, Upload, Normal People, and a look at the binge-worthy series The Good Place. I'm also going to be talking about some news, Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has made some changes to the Oscar eligibility requirements this year, and that's important because we've already had a month of no movies going to the theaters. We've had so many things delayed, a lot of them getting thrown into next year. But at the same time, we don't know what's going to be happening in the middle, in the last part of this year. And there's going to be many films that are going to want to be released, and they may end up having to be released on demand. And the problem with that is the Oscars have an eligibility issue. They say they have to play so many days in a Los Angeles movie theater. But they're going to lift that requirement because of the coronavirus and the restrictions that have caused over the year. And that makes stuff like Trolls World Tour or Scoob, which premieres in a couple weeks on demand, eligible for the Academy Awards. Those, of course, would be for the animated films. Now, they've made some other changes like the sound mixing and stuff, but most people don't. I mean, the cinemaphiles care about that, but just your average theater goer doesn't care about that. The big thing is the theatrical window. Now, what's interesting is that relates to another story going back to Trolls World Tour. That movie made an unprecedented amount of money as an on-demand release. And Universal came out this week and announced, hey, it's made $100 million. They've had like 5 million downloads and it was $20 a pop. So that translates to $100 million gross. They didn't put it in any theaters. And that's just in just the couple weeks that it's been open. It's still going to make some money. And then it's still going to have its purchase on demand and DVD rights for that. One of the things that happened when Universal announced that is, I think the CEO of Universal essentially made a statement that said they're going to be looking at changing this theatrical window. They're going to be playing around with that. Maybe they're going to be sending stuff directly on demand. There's going to be some of them that they're looking at doing a day and date, which means you can see the movie in theaters, but you can also get it on demand on the same date, which a lot of independent movies already do, by the way. For as much as everybody talks about preserving this theatrical window for those wide releases, they do, but there's a lot of independent films that do open, have a limited theatrical run, but they're available on demand sometimes before they even hit theaters. And that's a reality of the business. It's just the big, huge moneymakers don't necessarily do that. They respect that theatrical window. And because the Academy has rules against that, of course, that pushes the studios to have that theatrical window. And that theatrical window has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller before they get it available in the home. There are some movies that make it to home video within just a couple months. It used to be a year before it showed up on VHS. And then I remember there was a time where it was like 6 months. And now I think they like to have a 3-month theatrical window. And every now and then a movie will break that, but generally they respect that. But essentially, Universal's come out and said that they're going to look at not preserving that, which cheeses off the theaters because that's where the theaters make their money. They need that theatrical window because they need to be able to exhibit the big movies, not because they make money from tickets, but because they make money from concessions, and they only make concession money if butts are in the seats. So they want an excuse for people to go to the theaters, and AMC's really cheesed off of that, and they've basically said, hey, we're going to ban the movies from Universal from ever showing. Which is kind of a toothless threat at this point because no wide theaters are open and there's nothing going into the theaters right now. So that's sort of an empty threat that will have to play out. But I don't know if they're going to be able to say, hey, we're not going to hold Fast and Furious movies or the Jurassic World movies or the Minions movies. Those are huge blockbusters that they're carving away from. And all that's going to do is push it more online by banning these releases. And what are they going to do about Warner Brothers with Scoob coming out in 2 weeks? They haven't addressed that. And also, I find it interesting that they're only mad at Universal now, not when they first announced that they were going to do this early in April. And that's because getting mad at somebody after you tried something and made a lot of money doing it cobbles your argument and power, because then you're just upset that that worked. They weren't complaining about it beforehand. So we have not seen the end of this, and we won't even know how this is going to shake out, because AMC's not reopening their theaters for at least another month, I can't imagine. And even when they do, they're going to be dealing with social distancing requirements, and that means that the theaters is only going to be able to show so many shows. We have a long, complex system to go through over the next couple weeks and months before we even know what's going to happen to theaters, before people can start beating their chest and boycotting each other. But this is going to be an issue, and I do not think it's going to end well for theaters, because home theaters are so good at this point. I mean, people are going to want to get out of the house, but once you get past the initial I'm tired of the quarantine reaction, people are going to want to just watch stuff in the comfort of their own home. There's no way to change that. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I've got two trailers here. The first one I want to hit is one that's meant to be in theaters. I never played this before because I'm not a huge fan of Christopher Nolan's hype. I like the movies in general, but I'm not a fan of the overhype that happens with them. So I never played this Tenet trailer, but I'm going to play it now because supposedly it's the next one that's going to be released July 17th. And but it probably won't be. I'm sure they're going to delay this one as well.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
Nuclear holocaust?
No. Something worse.
You have to start looking at the world in a new way.
This looks like an interesting film. It looks like it's doing to time travel what Inception did to Dreams. And it doesn't give too much of the plot away, and that's great. I'm looking forward to watch it reveal. I just hope that it doesn't have a Twilight Zone ending the way that Inception did, which was a cheap, terrible ending that was such a cheat and poorly written. I mean, just a poorly written ending for Inception that they thought was clever and it wasn't. I hope he has a better ending for Tenet. But this one, I don't expect this one to come out in July. The whole reason for this release with Nolan behind it is he wants to do 70mm and 35mm and IMAX showings. And you can't do that in theaters that A, aren't open to full capacity or opened at all. So I expect this one to get fully postponed. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm the bearer of bad news, but that's the way it's going to be. So expect this one to get bumped into 2021 or maybe just November. The next one I want to hit really quickly is a Netflix movie, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy versus the Reverend, is going to be on Netflix on May 12th.
I found an old library book that was checked out 5 years after I got taken.
Maybe there was another girl we didn't know about?
Do you really think so?
Okay, bye.
Kimmy.
Where'd you get that?
There is another girl.
Well, girls, plural.
There's another bunker. I have to get to those girls.
What, Kimmy? Your wedding is in 3 days.
This is a pickle. How do we choose?
Maybe you can help us.
That's it. Titus! You're a genius.
I know.
What's interesting about this one is it's an interactive film, supposedly. Like Bandersnatch, which was a Black Mirror spinoff, Netflix has the technology to do the branching storylines. And at least the stuff that they put in the trailer doesn't look all that interesting in terms of the branching. But, you know, who knows? It might get a little clever. So I'm curious because I love that idea. I love the interactive movie concept, the old Choose Your Own Adventure book. So I'm really looking forward to that. So we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Flood and Normal People.
We'll be right back.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with The Flood. An immigration agent in the UK is vetting an asylum seeker who attacked a police officer when he was discovered.
You've claimed asylum in the United Kingdom. Before you get into your story, have you ever been arrested, convicted, or charged with a crime in any country?
Do you think I'm a terrorist? Is that why...
That's standard procedure. Have you ever been involved in or supported terrorism?
You understand, when you are trying to cross borders, the only people that will help you are dangerous people.
I was told to come here.
Where do you want to go?
The Flood, as the name, it's not actually a literal flood. It's a metaphor for what some people see as a flood of immigrants coming into a country. And this is a British movie. It's made in Britain. It's made by the British. It's completely takes place, well, not completely takes place in the UK, but it's all very UK-centric. And that's the reason to see this movie. That's what makes it significant, because here in America, we have our own immigration issues. And there's a lot of people on multiple sides of this. There isn't even a two-sided issue. There's many facets to the immigration issue. There's economic things to consider. There's humanitarian things to consider. There's national security to consider. There are so many different elements to the immigration issue that it's not just a single issue. And it gets very muddy, and there's a lot of people who've got skin in the game, and there's a lot of people who have very strong opinions on what's going on here in America. The UK, and any country really in Europe, is dealing with immigration as well, because any prosperous country, you're going to have people trying to flee problematic situations, whether it's something extreme like war and famine and genocide, or it just could be fleeing a poverty. It could just be fleeing a bad life or looking for a greater opportunity somewhere. And you're always going to be impacted by the countries that are physically near wherever you are. So obviously in America, there's a huge concern about immigration coming from the South, whether it's Mexicans or other people from Central and South America that are coming up through that way. And that's the focus of immigration in America. I mean, yeah, there's immigration that comes. There's a lot like I live in Columbus, Ohio. There's a huge Somali population. There's a large Arab population. There's a large Pakistani population, a large Indian population. So you have immigration coming from all over the world. But the hot button issue to a lot of people in America is the immigration coming from the South, because we share a border with them. And you get that in the UK, but the UK, you've got people coming across the Mediterranean. And even though the UK's up there technically north of the continent, the people coming tend to be from the African region or the Arab region or up across the, you don't have a problem with Germans coming over or French coming over to the UK. You have people coming through those countries, similarly to how somebody in Nebraska might feel about the immigration of people through the states that are originating south of our border. The reason this movie is significant is because it gives you a chance as American to watch something that is not American and does not fit those American issues exactly. And it allows you to step back from it and say, okay, this isn't exactly what we're facing, but we're facing something similar. But it allows you to remove yourself from the argument so you can actually have a more intellectual, enlightened look at it. And that's one of the reasons I like this movie. I thought that it gave people a chance to examine the immigration issue from a different perspective and to see what the people in the UK are dealing with, which is similar to what we deal with, but it's different. So it's a UK approach. So, you know, you maybe won't have such a knee-jerk reaction. It's an okay story. I think it really, the message of the story is everybody's different. And everybody has a reason for doing things. And there is a little bit of a subtext here that the rules for the immigrants, a lot of people who are actual citizens may not even meet those requirements. It's just you happen to have lived there and have been born there. So it's an eye-opening movie, but it's pretty heavy-handed at times. I'm going to have to say that The Flood kind of rocks, mainly for the cultural significance of watching.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Normal People. This is a series on Hulu. It's an Irish series, actually. And it's based on a best-selling Irish book, and I believe it's airing in Ireland now. The BBC's involved in it, but of course, it's not a Hulu original. Hulu didn't produce it. It's sort of the way Netflix has a lot of anime and British programming that they call Netflix original, but it's really just imported. Anyways, based on the international bestseller, this Hulu drama follows two young lovers in Ireland who come from different classes and how their lives change as they grow up.
You know, when we were together in first year of college.
It'd be awkward if something happened with us.
No one would have to know.
I didn't know your mom worked in the Sheridan's house.
What's Marianne like in her natural habitat?
I don't know. I don't see much of her.
I don't want people going around town saying that knacker is dating my sister.
It's not what I want anymore. I feel nothing for you. Nothing.
Why are you saying this?
This is very Irish. And if you've not seen much Irish TV and movies, which I've not seen a lot of, but I've seen enough to say this, it feels very Irish. If you've not seen enough Irish programming, you really don't know what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, you get some funny stuff in Ireland. Like, you know, Father Ted's a very funny show. But that's not the typical Irish drama. Irish dramas tend to be very heavy and, you know, sort of fly-on-the-wall type thing. Almost like a Norwegian drama. I mean, if you watch Norwegian cinema, and even if you watch Norwegian television, there's a heaviness to it. Even the comedies are very heavy. You know, any sort of Scandinavian programming is like that. And you get that influence in Irish works as well. And this one, it's very subdued and very low key. And, it's a story that's familiar because we've seen this a billion times before where the brainy girl likes the jock and they kind of get together, but they don't want to admit to their friends and they're dealing with their own interpersonal issues there. She's wealthy. He's more working class, but he's popular. And then throughout the series, their roles shift. Like when it starts off with them in secondary school and she's basically a nerd and they start having a physical relationship, but they don't want to let anybody know because it just makes things complicated at school. But of course there's feelings involved. And then eventually they go to university and, he's less popular at the university and she kind of comes out of her shell and she kind of blossoms there. And so there's a shift in the pattern and it's their relationships on and off and with each other and, with other people. It's that character study. It's a love story of two people who keep coming back to each other. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I don't have a problem with it. It's kind of boring to me because it is so deadpan. It is so flat at times. That's kind of the way the presentation is. And that's what I mean where it feels like an Irish movie. I've seen those before, but it doesn't grab me. Maybe if I were younger, it'd be interesting. It's to me, I'm not into it. But if you like this sort of thing, a very pragmatic look at people's lives as they change, but they're still intertangled, you might enjoy this. So I'm going to have to say that it kind of sucks, but for the right person, it might be okay.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Wretched and Upload. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Wretched. A teenage boy goes to live with his father for the summer and discovers a demon in the woods that preys on children.
Dad, Mom's being weird.
Mom's always been weird. What are you doing up here?
Dad, don't let her in.
My son likes to play hide and seek. Can you bring him down?
I didn't say he was here.
You're a very stupid boy.
Can I help you?
Is Dylan home?
Dylan, down here, baby.
You know, your son Dylan? I don't have a son.
He had no idea who I was talking about.
This is obviously a horror movie. but I gotta say, I was really impressed. The independent world is where real interesting stuff in horror is going on. Your mainstream horror movies, There's some really good ones. Like, I think the Conjuring series is good. And the Insidious series is good. But a lot of that sort of PG-13 throwaway horror is not all that great. And there's not interesting stuff happening in mainstream releases as much as you have the independent stuff. And that's the way it's been for about 10, 15 years, that the most innovative stuff is either happening in foreign horror or independent horror that's getting like on-demand releases. But sometimes that stuff gets very extreme. Sometimes that stuff gets very nihilistic and violent and graphic. This one's not that. Now, don't get me wrong. It's scary, and it has unpleasant things happening to it, and it does have a certain degree of gore and makeup effects. But something about this just makes it feel like a bona fide horror movie that can go up against head-to-head-wise in terms of its tone and atmosphere. It can go up against the Conjuring movies, in my opinion. I mean, it doesn't have the same budget behind it, but it really makes a scary character. If this were done as a mainstream, it would have been PG-13 and it would have been terrible. But I found it really effective and scary and well written. And the characters, well, they have some silly things going on. It's an effective film. Now, the other thing they're doing with this movie is they're releasing it in drive-in cinemas. It's not just going on demand. They were going to have a theatrical release, obviously, like most films. And they couldn't have the theatrical release because of the coronavirus and shutting down theaters and doing stay-at-home orders and everything like that. But one of the things that's happened, and it's not all over the country because not everybody in every state can do this, but there's some drive-in theaters that are opening up that are able to get, even if they are stay-at-home orders, they're able to get around those because, you know, the cars are far enough apart. And, if you have a drive-in theater, check first to see what their policy is of going to the bathroom and, going into the ticket window and having to keep distance and what the regulations are there. But you can bring your own food and go to the drive-in. And all throughout a bunch of states like Arizona and California, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, North Carolina, Alabama, all these places have some drive-in theaters. If you were to go to ifcfilms.com, you should be able to find The Wretched and figure out if it's a drive-in theater near you. And the drive-in theater is a great place for a horror movie. It goes back to the old days of the drive-in. This is a movie you can get at home and watch it creepy on your own, on demand, or you can go see it at the drive-in. This is really an effective film. I fully enjoyed this, and I'm going to have to say that The Wretched totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Upload. A man dying after a car accident is uploaded into a digital afterlife where he finds himself torn between his girlfriend, who pays the bills, and the customer service rep who helps him along the way.
His vitals are dropping. We're losing him.
Do we really want to upload?
We could be together forever.
You're so amazing. But forever is just like so long.
3, 2, 1. Upload. Hello, Nathan. 10 fingers and toes?
Pretty seamless.
This is the first day of the rest of your afterlife. Welcome to Lakeview. Uplifting views, timeless Americana.
Through guy coming through.
I previewed this a couple weeks ago, and one of the things I said that made me a little bit nervous about it was I said the characters are too good looking. I mean, physically attractive. The main guy is just a really good looking guy. And obviously the girlfriend of his who uploads him, she's gorgeous, but that's kind of part of her thing. She's this trophy wife type character. And the girl that he is falling in love with, who's a customer service rep, she's also gorgeous too, but she's supposed to be just sort of like the dorky girl, but she's the gorgeous dorky girl. I mean, she's still absolutely stunning, you know. I gotta say, it did get in the way. The main character in this, he's just too good looking. Because he's not relatable. And they even have to write around that to the point where they're saying, well, you're so good looking and you're such a cool guy. And I guess that's kind of part of the point of his character is it's he's having to learn how to adjust in this afterlife universe. it's one of those things where there's a lot of privilege, and people talk about privilege a lot today. And they talk about it in terms of race and gender and that. But there's a huge privilege that comes to being attractive. If you are physically attractive, you get away with a lot more. People will give you the benefit of the doubt. People will be nicer to you. I mean, that's stuff that's been actually measured clinically that shows that people who are more attractive, they have a better life because people help them out more and people are a little bit more nice to them. You know, it's the same thing of a pretty girl can cry her way out of a ticket where, you know, an ugly girl can't. So his character comes from such a place of privilege because he's so good looking. And then the characters are rich because he's not rich, but his girlfriend's so rich. You know, there's a lot of privilege kind of just dumped in here that I really don't think it was necessary. They could have stripped that out a little bit, and they do play with the class structure there. The other thing that's interesting about this one is it's meant to be a comedy. It starts off as a comedy. Reminds me a little bit of what happened with the Orville, if you watched the Seth MacFarlane Star Trek knockoff, basically. When that show started, it was trying to do sort of like a Family Guy version of Star Trek. And so you had these Star Trek stories, but you had these crass jokes or deliberately offensive or referential to what you have in Family Guy, in the Orville. And the series started out as kind of this comedy, and it was real sort of jarring because they were trying to do serious episodes, but then they had the goofy, silly Family Guy elements to it. As the Orville went on, they started to drop away a lot of the funny stuff, and they started to try and do bona fide Star Trek episodes. And those are where it got better. Now, I haven't watched all of the Orville, but I remember watching how that developed and that the comedy was shedding away from it as it went forward. And I feel that you're getting that with Upload is when the series starts, the first two or three episodes, they throw in a lot of jokes and gags and they have payoffs later on and callbacks, which is a very typical sitcom structure. But, you know, by about halfway through the season, it starts getting more serious. It starts, you know, working on some of these issues. And I find it a really interesting because at the same time, I've been watching The Good Place. I'll be talking about that in the next segment. But it's a nice foil to The Good Place, whereas The Good Place is dealing with the afterlife, the real afterlife. The Upload is dealing with a artificial afterlife and the artificial extension of human consciousness. And there are certain things that they just barely graze into, like heavy philosophical questions that I'm sure are going to come up later on, but they graze into it and they're not examining it the way, say, something like Black Mirror, but the groundwork is set for that. So I think this would be a more interesting show if they kind of just got rid of the comedy and went straight forward into it being more of a, maybe a light drama, but still a drama. That's what makes the series work. And they finally were, you know, near the end of it, they finally kind of give at least some structure to the privilege of this guy, this good looking guy. But like I said, at the beginning, it just doesn't quite work. But it takes a little bit of time to get into. It's not perfect. It's not at all near the level of what The Office became or for Parks and Rec, but it's definitely worth checking out. I have to say that Upload kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Good Place and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews, and I want to talk about a TV series. It's not on anymore. It just recently wrapped up. But the reason I wanted to talk about it is it's absolutely binge-worthy, and it's available for the most part on streaming. We'll talk about that in a second. But the series is The Good Place. I know I'm a little bit behind the times on this one, but recently my wife and I binge-watched it, and I figured it was worth talking about, especially to kind of be as a foil for Upload, which I just talked about in the previous segment. But in The Good Place, Kristen Bell stars as a self-described Arizona trash bag who finds herself miraculously in heaven after she dies in a freak accident.
You, Eleanor Shellstrop, are dead.
Cool.
You're okay, Eleanor.
You're in the good place.
You are here because you got innocent people off death row.
You are my soulmate.
Cool, bring it in, man.
You'll stand by my side no matter what, right?
Of course I will.
I wasn't a lawyer. There's been a big mistake. I'm not supposed to be here.
Wait, what?
Okay, first of all, the first three seasons of this are available on Netflix. I think in the entire run of the series, because it goes through four seasons, I think there's like 52 or 53 episodes. So it's going to take you a little bit of time, but it's relatively light and it's very funny at times. The last season just recently aired on NBC. Now, if you have Hulu, you only get like the last three or four episodes right now, like 9 through 13 of that season. Eventually, they're probably going to put the fourth season on both Hulu and Netflix. But one thing you can do is you can go onto Amazon or any on-demand service, however you buy your TV, and you can buy the last season for like $10. And that's what my wife and I did. We watched the first three seasons. Watch the first three seasons on Amazon. If you like those and you really want to watch it, then spend the cash to get the last season. And by that point, if you really like the episode, it's worth it. And here's the thing with The Good Place. It, of course, deals with the afterlife. It's about somebody who dies and they go to heaven and they realize they don't belong there. And it's great for people with the imposter syndrome. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in as the series goes on all the way through the fourth season. I'm not going to tell you any of it because I don't want to give away any sort of reveals or such, but the series is very smartly written and it's run by Michael Schur, who is best known for being involved in, I think he worked on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he worked on Parks and Rec, and he was on The Office, best known in The Office, playing Moe's, who was the cousin of Dwight Schrute. He was the one, there was something weird about him. He would always run around and he was very strange, but he's actually the showrunner of this. And it's a brilliant series because it manages to present this afterlife that is clearly not in line directly with any organized religion. And they even address it at the beginning of the series where they're like, well, every religion gets it about 5% right. To speak from a spiritual aspect, that's very possible. Who knows? Nobody knows what happens when you die. I mean, there's a lot of people who are very vested in their faith, who they have faith that a certain thing's going to play out when they die. But, you know, they may not. You don't know. That's part of the unknown. That's why it's faith. And this presents it in a very non-offensive way. It's just like, hey, look, this is where we are. This is the good place. There's a bad place. There's angels and demons, et cetera, et cetera. And it's presented in such a way that it's whimsical and it's silly. And yeah, goofy things happen, but it's not offensive. I mean, I guess anyone can be offended by anything, but this is a non-offensive approach to an afterlife comedy. And it also has an element of real ethics to it, because part of the story is Kristen Bell's character, Eleanor, is paired up with her soulmate, the Senegalese professor of ethics. And throughout the series, he's talking about ethics and they're talking about different types of ethics and what means. And there's actually like real things you can learn from this. Now, don't take the full sum total of ethics just from The Good Place, but it does show conundrums and morality and what constitutes ethics and whether it's your impact on the world and the universe, or does it take into account your negative impact? Does it take into account your selfishness to it? It's a really brilliantly done series. And through four seasons, every other TV show you end up with, no matter how good or bad, you always have some season where you're like, that season wasn't very good. Like a great example is in The Office, the seasons without Michael Scott, they took some time to get their footing. You go to Parks and Rec, that first season with Paul Schrader, the season and a half, he's kind of a terrible character. He never comes up again in the series. It's, you kind of have to get through that, and you got to wait for Andy to be really, really funny into the second season. So you get a lot of these series that you have rough patches. Honestly, this thing hits the ground running and it's brilliant from the first get-go, and they change things and keep things fresh in season two. There's one part in season three where at first I was afraid they're going to spend the whole season doing this thing. And I worried about that. There was like one episode, like an episode and a half or so, where it started to drag a little bit, and that I had a problem with. But the rest of it just lickety-split goes to the end, and they change, and each season is different, and they have a different goal, and the characters are still fresh, and you don't have a rotating cast. That's the other thing. You know, something, even like Parks and Rec, in The Office, you run long enough, people leave the show and people come back. It was a short enough run that everybody was in it for the long haul. It is a brilliant series. If you've not watched it, it's funny, it's irreverent, it's intellectual at times, but also completely stupid at times. So yeah, I gotta say The Good Place totally rocks. So one of my new favorite shows.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. This is getting a new release on Blu-ray from Arrow Video. Holding out hope to get funded for a Las Vegas show, late-night TV horror hostess Elvira attends the reading of her aunt's will in a small, morally upstanding town.
Wanna talk tough movies? Here's a superhero with the biggest pair of all.
You looking for me?
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
This Elvira is a slimy, slithering succubus, a concubine, a streetwalker, a tramp.
Yes, she's got it all. She's everything you've ever wanted in a movie.
First of all, there's two big reasons why I like this movie. Dun-dun-dun-tsh. But this falls in line with a bunch of movies right around the late 80s, early 90s, that kind of all had this same theme of the misfit comes into town and kind of has to save the town. You saw this in Ernest Scared Stupid, and you saw this in Hocus Pocus, and it does feel like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, does kind of fit that as well. There's, of course, a lot of sexual innuendo and double entendre because it's Elvira. And yes, she looks great, and you see her cleavage throughout the entire movie. I never saw this in 1988. I don't know why. I just never got around to watching it. So I wanted to watch it because it got a new Blu-ray release. And, you know, it's a stupid plot. It's the story you've seen before of the person who comes to the small town, charms everybody, and, you know, sort of teaches everybody the folly of their ways. It's goofy. It's silly. The plot doesn't hold well together, but it has a great little side cast like Edie McClure's in it as, you know, the busybody of the town trying to stop everything from happening. Of course, Elvira's funny in it. She's wasn't at her height of her popularity. She was like, she was kind of at that peak, but probably starting to go down out of the mid 1980s was when she was best known. But, you know, she was still super popular then, and she was a lot of fun. And overall, it's a stupid movie, but it's whimsical, not much of a plot. It's just kind of fun to watch it from gag to gag to gag. I will say Elvira holding the movie together wasn't as good as I had hoped. She's better as the one-off lines, as you cut to commercial from the movie she's watching and making fun of. You know, if you're going to watch It Conquered the World, you can watch the Mystery Science Theater version, or you can watch the Elvira version and she can make jokes about it. You know, it takes a little while for her to kind of get her footing as a character that the movie's based around. But overall, it's silly and fun. It's something I might watch again. Now, if you don't want to get the Blu-ray, it's available on Tubi TV, which is one of my favorite bizarre choices of content for the quarantine. But I'm going to have to say Elvira, Mistress of the Dark kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
Other movies that are out on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Guns Akimbo, Arrow Season 8, and The Complete Series, The Grand Budapest Hotel as a Criterion Collection, Just One of the Guys, My Girl, My Girl 2, and Escape from L.A. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, hopefully I'll be talking about Valley Girl and Arkansas. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.